with my Japanese lover.
I love that you call them lovers.
I like it.
Very Sex in the City. I'm taking an individual a lover.
Japanese individual. No, lover. Let's go with that.
I just don't know. Sometimes I don't know what phrase to use, because even though they're not, like, none of these guys were, like, a boyfriend or a partner, necessarily.
Hey, guys! Happy Tuesday. You're listening to Comes With Baggage. This is Kate.
This is Chris.
And
that was an awkwardly long pause.
No, so I'm in Croatia now, which is...
Nice, that's right, because we didn't record last week because you were busy moving.
And you were busy hungover. Don't blame it all on me.
Oh my God, I was brutally hungover. The cheap wine here is just, it kills you. It's like $3 for a liter, so you're like, I can drink all of the liters. And then, yeah.
My liver is readjusting to being in Split, because for some reason, I don't get as hungover here as I do at home, drinking the same amount of alcohol. So then I'm like, yeah, give me all the shots. Give me all of the rakia.
I could have sworn you said you were taking a break from drinking while you were in Croatia last time we spoke.
Well, I thought I was, because my friend that I'm living with said that he was. But since I've been here, it's been a big celebration that I'm back and, like, meeting up with loads of people that I haven't seen in a while. And so there's been lots of drinking. But he does have his surgery next week or the week after, and then we're just gonna be at home for like two weeks.
Are you gonna like play nurse?
What's that?
Are you gonna play nurse?
Yeah.
Or you...
I only have to play nurse, like real nurse, for the first few days where he literally can't move. Like I
can't
have to
do anything.
Like,
yeah.
Help him take his pants off to go to the bathroom and stuff like that.
Sorry.
Which him and I are very much like, we've never had a romantic connection ever. We've never had a thing. Like, we are definitely just friends. But we have lived together multiple times, and like we know each other really well, so it's not
awkward.
It's just because he can't like bend over, so like he can take his pants off, he just can't push them down or pull them back up, because it's all like it's like a leg surgery, and like if he bends his muscles lengthen, and like it's pain and whatever.
But it sounds
I am. It's really beautiful. God, I forgot how beautiful this place is. Like, I'm constantly walking around in wonderment, and like literally every day I post something on my story of like pretty much the same, like Diocletian's palace. Like, they just don't build it like they used to. Like, this is so beautiful. Like, everywhere I turn, it's just stunning. And like with my friends that live here, I'm like, walking with me. I'm so annoying. I'm like, I need to take a picture of everything. And I used to live here. Like, I know what it looks like. But like, I just need to photograph it, because it's just so pretty. I can't stand it.
I love it. That's cool though. It's good to revisit a place after a while and see it with like fresh eyes.
Yeah. It is really beautiful here. You need to come visit.
I'd love to. I'm trying to figure out with the whole coronavirus thing. It's even though Africa's not directly impacted, a lot of people are freaking out about going there, and so it's throwing a whole like dampener over like trying to predict my finances for the next few months, because if a bunch of people cancel, that obviously impacts everything. So
yeah,
coronavirus, even though Africa barely has any cases, it's still getting the blame for it for some weird reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got, so here I've already had colleagues message me being like, what are you going to do? Because they're up to like 5 people in Croatia.
Yeah, Tbilisi has 2 now. And so my mum's like, so when, you know, are you going to be coming home? And
well,
I mean,
Italy,
I'm
like right next to Italy, and Italy,
oh, Italy has
borders.
So many right now.
Yeah. And I was in Zagreb last weekend, which is where the 5 cases are. And so I've already had friends message me being like, are you okay? I'm like, yes, I'm fine.
It's a weird one, because like it's not like, we talked about this with Josh on a recent episode, it's not the most lethal thing going around, but it's so contagious that's what's causing a lot of concern. So I'd be lying if I said I hadn't made like a rough idea of a plan of what I will do if it starts to get a bit more widespread in Georgia.
Yeah.
But
it's only,
I'm also trying to just be like, eh.
It's also something that I think needs to be said, is that like the only people that are dying from it are people that are like over 80 or very ill, or like
generally, yeah. But I mean, 2% is still 2%. If like a million people get it, that's a sizable chunk of any country's population. So it's a weird one. It's so easy to spread that you and I don't have anything to worry about, but we might have to worry about giving it to someone else while we're asymptomatic. So it's a shitty time, I think, in general, to be traveling. Not that it's not safe, but I mean, so many airlines are cancelling flights, countries are closing borders. Some travel insurance companies are refusing to cover things that are cancelled because of this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a whole episode we can do just about
this
topic.
Isn't that the point of travel insurance?
Yeah, but they're like, oh, you know, we can't really cover a pandemic. And it's like, I mean, my insurer does, but I know of some people who have found that their companies are not offering coverage for, like, cancellations related to this. They'll cover your medical expenses if you get it while you're abroad, but they don't want to cover all of the cancelled hotels and stuff.
God, if only we were in Morocco. I'm pretty sure there's no cases there.
No, Morocco's clean. That is just a so smooth that you just slipped that in there. Slipped it in.
As luck would happen,
we're speaking to someone from Morocco today. What a coincidence. Well, not from Morocco. She's been there for 2 weeks, so I guess not the opposite of from there. She's visiting there.
Because where it's safe.
But this week we're gonna speak to Lydia.
She doesn't have to worry about making out with the locals there and contracting.
No. Right now she can make out with locals to her heart's content, which is the topic of today's episode. We're talking about dating locals, which Kate and I have done a little of.
Yeah.
But Lydia has you know, dated...
I don't want to call her like a master of dating locals. But
no, but she definitely... she's dated more locals while traveling than she has expats. Which is, it contrasts to what Kate and I do.
Yeah.
We've dated a few locals, but mostly we date fellow expats or fellow digital nomads while we're on the road.
It was very interesting to talk to her. She was so much fun.
She has a really cool philosophy that pertains to dating locals, but also to travel in general. And I think a lot of people will find that really relatable. We had a great time chatting to the point that we went way over our usual time limit. Kate is going to use her marvelous editing skills to get that into a bite-sized chunk for you, but it really was a fun episode, and we're really excited to see what everyone thinks.
Yeah, I can't wait to meet her. She was wonderful. So enjoy the episode, guys.
Woo!
Lydia, so thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm so well. I'm so excited. This is my first podcast that I'm a guest on.
Oh, shit. Kate, be gentle.
I feel so special.
I feel special. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, that was all Chris.
Yes. that one throwaway status I made looking for podcast guests. I now have like 30 podcast guests lined up, so I should have just done that from the start.
You're like our resident booker now.
I can finally do something since you do all the editing, most of the promo, all the website stuff.
Finally, you make yourself worthwhile.
I just show up once a week and say a few funny things and then I go back to bed.
sounds great.
So where are you at right now, Lydia?
I am currently in a town called Tagazout in the south of Morocco. It's this sweet gem of a town right on the ocean. Lots of surfers come here. I'm not necessarily a surfer. I'm trying, but it's really hard. Yeah.
It is so hard.
I can get up. I just can't stay up. So I'm working on that.
Well, you're ahead of me. I can't even get off my knees.
I feel like when I was like 12, I took a surfing class or surfing whatever lesson in Hawaii. And I remember taking it with my friend, who was also 12 at the time. And we were, like, getting up. We were jumping onto each other's boards and, like, riding the same board together. Like, we were just, like, masters at it. And then I moved to Australia when I was, like, 22, 23, something like that. And I couldn't even get up. I couldn't even stand.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's more I got the fear.
Yeah.
Like, I was scared of falling. I was scared of sharks. I was scared of jellyfish. And, like, I just didn't want to be in the water at all.
Fair. Yeah. I love the water.
Fuck you up.
I'm, like, not even... Yeah. It's so funny. I'm not even scared of falling. It's, like, the opposite. I just literally can't get up. Like, my body's not used to working those muscles. So I just have to work on it.
So what takes you to Morocco? Because last I saw you, Kate was asking before we got on the call how I knew you, and I didn't get to explain, but we met at the hub in Hoi An.
Yes.
Where we were all doing the digital nomad thing. But you actually knew my wife before that because you were a fan of her blog.
Yeah, I needed to tell this story. So I, at the time, like years ago when I was living in Tanzania, this was like 2017, 2018, sorry. And I had followed Rochelle and her Adventures in Asia blog for a while. And, you know, she had posts about this guy that she met in China, this Aussie, and them getting engaged and all this whole story. And I was just pretty engaged with reading. I loved her writing style and everything, so I was a fan. And then I was in Hub Hoi An in Vietnam last year in June. And it just so happened that Rochelle and Chris were both there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I know about you guys. I've read your whole story. Yeah.
I feel like I know you.
Seriously.
That would be so weird.
Yeah.
Rochelle gets it a lot, and it's so weird to me because, like, in terms of traffic, you know, she's not super happy with where her blog's at, but she has this devoted following. So we'll be just in a random country, and someone will be like, hey, we're in blood. Do you want to have dinner tomorrow night? And I'll be like, how do they find you? Like, it's so crazy. She's got this, like, fanatical following. She's getting really excited across the table right now. She's, like, blushing and giggling.
Aw, yeah, well, she's, like, a fantastic writer and all those things. But it was just funny that I was like, congratulations on your engagement. I know your story, and I just met you. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that kind of is a fun little segue into today's topic in that Rochelle had no luck dating locals, which is why I just landed that plum job. I just rocked up, went, hey, what's up? I'm an average-looking dude, but I'm the best you're going to do here. And she's like, oh, well, you're right. So you've had a bit more luck, I guess, on that front. You before we jumped on recording, you were saying you've dated, you know, locals all around the world.
Yes, I have international lovers.
That sounds way better.
Well, see, I've had plenty of international lovers. They're just very rarely from the place I'm actually living.
Right. Yeah, that's the distinction to make. Each of the people I've been with romantically are literally from the place that I'm living at the moment.
Yeah, whereas most of my, I'm sure Kate's similar, like, I've dated and slept with very few Australians, a lot of Americans and British people, but there's not a lot of cultural difference there.
Right.
So I don't feel like it's like a huge jump, like, oh, you spell color a slightly different way. This isn't going to work.
This is a red flag for me.
Yeah, I'm just really, the Harvard comma is my deal breaker, and it's just.
Is it the Oxford comma?
Oh, it's the Oxford comma. Sorry,
Let's just have a mini grammar lesson.
Yeah. It's less known, and it actually goes twice between every third word. It's a bit niche. You guys wouldn't understand, I imagine.
So, okay, yeah. So I want to get, so you are remote, like you work remotely, you travel, you're kind of doing the whole long, like slow travel sort of thing, right?
Yes, 100%.
So how much time do you spend in each place that you move around to?
It's changed over time. It started off, like, I would say per city, about a week to 2 weeks. Now I'm moving, and then towards, because I've been on the road a little over a year, so the first half was faster by digital nomad standards, but for me, it was so new and novel, and I was still working it out. Now I spend up to a month, typically, in one city or one place, but that happened towards the middle of last year that I slowed it down a little bit.
I mean, even that, by, like, digital nomad standards, a month is still kind of...
It's pretty quick.
Yeah, certainly.
Chris, who we talked to a few weeks ago, is doing 3 months in each country. But even I found that a bit rushed. I'm like, no, I need 6 now. I'm getting so old and tired. How are you finding it? Like, do you feel like you get a good feel for the place in that month, or are you often leaving feeling like there's stuff left unexplored, or you're leaving behind, you know, because you're only really just starting to lock in some good friendships in a month, I feel like.
That's a really good question. I really believe in an abundance mentality. So I don't, even when I leave a place and, like, you know, my mindset could first easily go, oh, I haven't done enough of this or enough of that. I'm always looking at what I do have and what I did get. And so I never leave feeling like lacking. And
that's good.
Yeah, like truly. And I sink in sometimes for sure, and I've experienced burnout 100% where, especially working as a digital nomad in my job, I take it very seriously. You know, I'm a freelance writer and editor, and I have, like, consistent work, and I work very hard. So I do try to balance that with exploring and socializing, and it can certainly be a lot. But
yeah.
If I know myself, and so if I need time to slow down or just to have a night in, then I'll do that. But I do feel that my curiosity is quite expansive. So even if I'm in a place a week, a month, it doesn't really matter, because I'm just in consistent awe of the present moment. And I think
that's kind of cool. You never. Oh, sorry.
And I think that trickles into, like, especially our topic today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, like, if you're only spending a month in each place, how are you dating?
You just get shit done.
Yeah, it's.
No, I mean, I'm serious. Like, especially, like, what if you find someone you really like?
Mm.
Yeah, because we've done a whole episode on that, like, finding someone you like.
Exploration and then having dating. But...
yeah, that was always my pitfall.
Yeah, it's like that's guys, it's hard. But
I know.
It's so funny because I'm not like when I went into this like nomadic travel lifestyle, it wasn't even an occurrence to me. Like I'm not necessarily trying. It's just happening. And I don't like mean to say it like, oh, I'm just like, you know, like being mean, but it's happened very organically, all of these romances. I haven't met any of them through a dating app. It's been all literally just on the ground. Like sometimes I meet them
out in the wild of the world.
And I just take it from there. And because maybe it's because I'm so spontaneous and heightened to the present moment, and more so since living this lifestyle, I just take it all in for what that connection is in the moment. And then certainly I've had some, and we didn't talk about this too, like some of them are just that, they're just fun and they're just flirtations.
Yeah.
And I know that and I have that gut feeling, but there has been one or two where I did grow some feelings, and that's been really difficult and has certainly impacted my emotional roller coaster.
Influence whether or not you maybe stay a little bit longer somewhere to like see it out, or do you still like kind of have your like, okay, well, I'm leaving. So, I mean, Chris and I did a whole episode, like relationship best before, like exploration dating. Like, does it influence whether you stay longer in a place, or do you just still have like, okay, I'm leaving now. Like, we'll see where this goes.
Ooh, I think it has influenced. It never quite did because my itinerary just didn't work out as such. And well, with one of the individuals, we did meet up again. Like we had parted ways. We had this emotional like goodbye. And then we ended up meeting up again in another city later on that week. But then that made it even harder because like the context of that relationship was that out of all of the other locals that I had dated, he was about to move somewhere else abroad. So that changed the dynamic with that particular relationship. But it's difficult with the challenge, especially with locals, is like it's different than meeting another digital nomad or another traveler, because you can't say, oh, let's go this way together, you know? And that's been really hard to like beautiful. And like there's been so many wonderful experiences, but really difficult to move on from, sure. But like a lot of them have been just really fun, fiery flirtations and nothing more. And so I leave it there.
So do you tend to gravitate towards dating locals when you are traveling around? Because like, I don't have actually much experience in the area. Like I have a few, but for the most part, I tend to, and I don't know if it's just because I usually work in like hostels and more like tourism sort of industries.
Plus, you know, you have a type.
What's that?
And you have a type. Aussie and British guys are like your
thing. Yeah. But also, I mean, French, German, like I have lots of European.
Right.
But I met a lot of them when I was living in Australia, or when I was living, like as I've been living in Europe, I usually gravitate towards the Brits or the Aussies. But I mean, I have had a few locals, but I just tend to gravitate the other direction. And also I think it is more like the self-preservation thing, because when you are living somewhere and if you date a local, there is more of a chance of like, I almost have this fear of like, oh, I'm gonna get stuck here, I'm not gonna want to leave, like that sort of thing. And I think I tend to turn away But do you find that, like, when you are doing this digital nomad, like, year, couple years, whatever, that you do tend to gravitate more towards locals? It is a very authentic way to really experience a place.
Yeah, certainly. And I have some really magical stories from it. But yeah, that's a really good question. And I get asked that when I talk about it with, like, friends and stuff. They're like, are you into locals or something? And I put it this way. I really like connecting with people when I travel. So be it locals, be it other travelers, be it foreigners, like, be it staff. Like, even if I'm, say, in a hotel and I'm, like, I spend a few days just, like, you know, like, luxing out in a hotel, I will talk to the front desk staff. Like, I just, like, want to know their names and their stories. And that's just kind of who I am. And I really, you know, make a lot of efforts to find local communities. So I use Couchsurfing as a huge tool. And that's how I've met one of the individuals that I was with last year. So, and then I'm just really open to it. It's funny, though, because I'm not necessarily, like, against dating other travelers or expats. In fact, I've really liked other travelers and expats and felt a connection, but either nothing really manifested, because I'm not forcing anything. I'm just really, like, playing it by ear and going with the flow. Or they were in a relationship. And that is something that I'm like, okay, then that's moving on from that, you know? So it's not, like, just those connections have never manifested, whereas just it so happens. And I'm still open to either or. I'm not like, oh, I can't break my cycle now. Like, but it's just... But it's been funny to me to be now dating locals in Morocco, too. And I'm like, what is happening? It's wonderful. But yeah.
What are Moroccan men like? I don't even think I've ever, like, thought about it. Because it is, Morocco's close to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And, but north of Africa, right?
Yeah, it's.
My geography, right?
It's like below Portugal and Spain. It's northern Africa. It has influences of European, African, Middle Eastern cultures all in one. It's really fascinating. It depends. I think in Tagus.
Just taking notes.
I know. I'm like, I've only just started this whole digital nomad thing. I'm in Croatia right now. And so I'm just like, where do I go next?
Come to Morocco.
Like, a bit attractive. And she's like, yeah, maybe I can pay a quick visit to Morocco.
How tall are they?
They are really attractive here. And I've only really, like, I started in Marrakesh, and there, it's not so bad now from what I've heard it has been in the past. But there's a lot of creeps, certainly. And that I didn't think I would really be meeting any Moroccan guys here. But then now I'm in Tagazout, and it's like, it really depends on where you are in a country, because Tagazout is such a chill, tourist-friendly, like, surfing town. And so the vibes here are very different than the bustling medinas of Marrakesh. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask my question before we get too far.
Ahead.
So I want to circle back to the start.
Okay.
So, because obviously there's... Now that you've dated a few, you know, people from around the world, you've probably become a little bit better at handling some of the cultural and language barriers.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, going back to the first person that you dated who was, you know, of a totally different culture and ethnic background to you, like, how did that come about, and what was the experience like having to sort of, I would say, almost fumble through something that is much easier to do when you're sort of connecting with someone of the same language and cultural background?
Yeah, the first one wasn't as difficult, although I met him in Malaysia, and his English, like, in general, Malaysians have fantastic English, and so that made it really easy. And I met him through the Couchsurfing community, so that was a very, perhaps, different context, because he had been around international people all the time. So he was a local.
Yeah.
He was like this. The Couchsurfing community in this particular area was mostly made up of a lot of local Malaysians, the occasional expat traveler, you know, nomad. But in general, it was just friends getting together and welcoming, you know, the drop-ins, sort of speak. And I was there. I was in this place in Penang for a couple of weeks. So. It kind of manifested, but it was really interesting with this one individual, because he was a little younger than me. Like just something that I hadn't even come across before. So that it was not only this cultural difference, certainly, but then it was evaluating his maturity, but the fact that he was always around international people and he had all these broad perspectives that I haven't even, you know, seen in men that are older than me. I was just like so intrigued and
attracted.
Yes.
I mean, that would be very attractive.
Yes, certainly. It's just, I had to, you know, kind of dissect what age meant to me when it came to romance and if it bothered me because I was personally uncomfortable with it. I mean, of course, like, I'll disclaimer, it was all legal, but...
Okay, I was gonna say, yeah, I was gonna say, like, would you say what the age difference was? Like, you don't have to say his age, but, like, what was the age difference?
It was, I believe, 4 years younger.
Okay.
Yes. So, but I was 24 at the time, so that would have made him 20.
20.
Oh, okay. So not too bad. But I can see that, like, a lot of 20-year-olds aren't necessarily super worldly or mature, especially back home.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? I really highly doubt that I would have a connection with a 20-year-old in Canada. We would just be on very different playing fields.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So I guess there weren't so many, like, linguistic or cultural challenges there because he was quite worldly.
Yes, yes.
But you have you dated someone where there wasn't a shared language or where the cultural differences were so big that it actually did present a bit of a challenge in starting a romance?
Certainly. And so this comes into play with my Vietnamese man, lover.
Lover.
All over the world. I really like this girl.
Yeah. And that was like a whole movie, I want to say, like my whole romance with him. And he spoke very little English. So he had the basics of the introductory conversation, so to speak, like, where are you from? Where are you going? What's your name? All of that. And I just met him so spontaneously. So I don't know if you want to hear this story.
I want to hear
because I assume this happened in Hoi An.
It did, yeah.
So it's kind of like I can picture all this where it is and stuff.
Yeah, so it was right out of the old, like, historical center, and I was just visiting some of my Vietnamese girlfriends at their tailor shop, you know, just casually. I became really good friends with these girls, and we're giggling and laughing. I'm getting some clothing tailor-made, as one really often does in Hoi An. And I was about to leave and just go to a cafe and read my book. Like, that was my plan for my Saturday evening. And as soon as I left their shop, this guy on his motorbike just, like, pulls up to me.
And as they often do in Hoi An as well.
As they often do. So that's not anything new at first. And he kind of, like, takes off his sunglasses. And I thought, geez, he's really handsome. And he starts to ask, oh, like, what's your name? Like, and this just was out of nowhere. Let me be like, within a couple minutes of leaving. And I was just walking on. And he asked me, you know, where are you from? And I said, Canada. And he says, where are you going? I'm like, to a cafe. It was very kind of standard, like almost just basic English back and forth.
Yeah,
and I
was waiting for him to, like, say, hey, come to my tailor shop. Or, hey, there's a... Because downtown in Hoi An, that's like, people will stop all the time, be like, hey, where are you going? And you're like, oh, here. And like, oh, do you want to come to my shop? And you're like, no.
Yeah, and I could tell right away that, like, his English wasn't that strong. But then he says, do you want to get a beer with me at the beach? And I was just, and it's one of those things where my intuition felt good right off the bat. And I'm a huge believer in trusting my gut and trusting my intuition. It's taken me always to safety and to the right moments and people and situations. So I didn't feel off about it, but there was something in my head that was just, this is crazy, right? Like, just getting on the back of this guy's motorbike and going to get beers, and we just met. And so I kind of had to process it. And I said, can I meet you later? He said, yes, come back here at 6. So it was maybe like 4 p.m. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. So, you know, fast forward, I read my book, more so just thought about, okay, if I go back and he's there, then he was probably, like, genuinely interested. But if not, I'll just go back to my bed and Netflix and all will be well. Yeah. And then,
not a bad fallback. Yeah.
Yeah, not bad. That was my original plan. But then I was so intrigued by, you know, I'm a writer and I'm, as I alluded to earlier, just a very curious soul. And so I just have been so much more open since pursuing this career path, since traveling as a digital nomad to, you know, like being in the moment.
Chasing the story.
Yeah, living the story, you know? Yeah. And so I go back to this spot and there he is. And he had a big grin on his face. He gives me his second helmet and we're off to the beach in Hoi An all before I know it. And I just started like hysterically laughing on the back of his motorbike. I couldn't believe that I was doing this. And he kind of turns around and he was so confused. And that already was like a barrier moment, I think. And from then on, I quickly realized, yeah, we couldn't really converse in English. So it became a squabble of Google Translate a lot, just a lot of body language, a lot of eye contact, a lot of repetition, taking things slow. But it was very challenging, but simultaneously uplifting to recognize, geez, I can feel a romantic connection with somebody despite the barrier.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know about Kate. I haven't had a chance to encounter that because when I have dated locally, they've always been part of like I dated a couple of girls in China, but they were on the fringe of that expat community, or mm-hmm, some of them actually worked in, like, they might have worked in real estate or they worked in bars. So they had an English base, and while there were cultural things, there was never any issue with communication so much.
Yeah, I mean, I have had one person that, like, he was French. He did not speak any, like, very, very, like, the most minimal English ever. And my French is terrible, but it was in Australia, so it wasn't exactly a local. But I remember, like, it was so fun. Like, it's hard, but it's, like, so intriguing because, like, you obviously feel this romantic connection with someone. And so you want to keep seeing them. But it is really hard when there's that language barrier there. Like, we used to just spend most of our time, like, laying in bed watching movies with the closed captioning on. Like, sometimes, whether it was French movies with Americans or English subtitles or English movies with French subtitles. And then, like, I remember we went to a AFL match and like it was all like body language and like signing and like pointing at things and, like nodding your head.
Sounds familiar.
I guess in some ways the language barrier isn't as big an issue though if you've only got like a very finite amount of time in that country, because you're not having to worry about like, okay, how the hell are we gonna, you know, like you're like not in your head playing how the hell are we gonna get visas and how are we going to have kids and blah, 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 because you've only got, you know, a few weeks or a few months. So I guess then you can just enjoy the connection you've got rather than worrying about possible futures that seem challenging because of that barrier.
Mm-hmm, certainly. And it's almost like I kind of like everything, not to be all doomsday, but everything comes to an end, like generally, like the only constant is change. So like in a lot of instances, like with hindsight, obviously, I'm just like, despite the barriers, they're just not, you know, I don't feel, because, you know, in another world, say, I really felt like this guy was my person. Like, I would make that effort, but there was always, there was not that,
in the back of your mind, you're like, you know, this is just fun. This is going to be a story. This is going to be an experience. Like, let's just see where this goes. But it's not like my forever.
Yeah, I certainly like felt that with my Vietnamese guy. And I mean, I was still like going with the flow and wanting to explore it. Like, he was my longest sort of relationship flirtation, so to speak. So I really experienced a lot of Vietnam through his eyes. He took me on the back of his motorbike through, you know, all of central Vietnam. And it was just really incredible. And I think I, you know, in the back of my mind with all of these relationships, I knew that a lot of them would come to an end. But I was trying really hard not to think about that. I was just trying to truly be in the moment. Now, there was, you know, one of the individuals I felt that I wanted to be in a relationship with, but the timing was just off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that will happen a lot, especially if you're just
doing the digital nomad thing and always on the move. Yeah.
It can make it really hard. Yeah. Even as a long-term expat, it can sometimes be hard to form like a longer relationship. Like, you know, I lived abroad for a decade and I, you know, had three relationships in there that I'd consider real. A lot of fun ones in between, but three that like are solid, because it is hard because people have contracts expiring or travel plans, or it's very different than.
I feel like if your time is up, like if you feel like your time is up in a place and you want to continue this lifestyle, like you don't want to have this like tie that's making you stay somewhere.
Mm.
Not making you stay, but like it is, like you said earlier, a lot easier to date someone that is also a digital nomad because they're up for moving around.
Yeah.
But if you're dating someone that's local that wants to stay where they live, where they're from, like they have, it's very difficult to be tempted or needed to stay longer somewhere where you feel like your time is kind of up living there, but your time may not be up with this person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. I think it comes down to like, it wouldn't be a question if I really felt like this could be a person for me. Like I wouldn't
And I was about to ask that, like, would you, in the right circumstances, change your plans?
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And I'm very much open to that. Like, if it felt, and then it wouldn't feel like how we're phrasing it, like that I was made to stay. It would be like, no, I want to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Sure, with some of them, I could have maybe, like, I would have wanted to stay longer, but my inevitable, like, feeling was like,
wasn't a desire to stay. It wasn't strong enough to keep you there.
Yeah, it wasn't a desire to see it through long term.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So you said though that you've like, have you had like, I guess, which would have been like, looking back, has there been a time where it's been really hard to leave?
Yes. And that was with my Japanese lover.
I love that you call them lovers.
I like it.
Very Sex in the City. I'm taking a lover.
Japanese individual. No. Lover. Let's go with that.
I just don't know. Sometimes I don't know what phrase to use, because even though they're not like, none of these guys were like a boyfriend or a partner necessarily.
I struggle with this a lot because like I haven't been in a committed like serious relationship in years because I've been traveling around so much and moving around so much, but I feel like by calling it like I've dated someone, like we were never together but we were a thing, whatever, it kind of minimizes the amount of feeling that there was there.
And I think so, love is the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's actually really good, because like I have a couple people that like I know I was in love with even though we weren't in a committed relationship, but they were like people I met traveling, like very serious, strong feelings there, but they were never like my boyfriend. But by saying that, like, oh yeah, like, you know, this fling or this, like, I feel like it minimizes it. I like lover.
Yeah.
I tend to call them situationships.
Ooh, I like situationships. That's a good word. I think Kaylin, and you hit it really head on for me, because sometimes, you know, I don't, when I'm talking about these experiences to people just in my circles, it's, I don't like using the word fling, because I'm like, no, like we, you know, it
was
a
connection, right?
There was a connection, certainly. And it was like a short amount of time, but it, like, it's almost propelled forward so much more when you wear your heart on your sleeve and you're so open to it. Like, I've not ever had like experiences like this dating back in Canada. So it's just like a different situation, and they provided a lot of like meaning for me. And even though with my Japanese lover, we were only like around each other, you know, not more than 3 days, I think. And we were like at each other's side that whole time. But I felt like this unquestionable chemistry and this unquestionable connection. And we just got to know each other and explored that. And that was so difficult to part from. But we kind of had to have this very adult conversation at the end where we both agreed that we just wouldn't be a good partner to each other at this moment in time.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool that you can have that conversation after 3 days, because that means you've built something a bit more solid than just a physical connection, like that you can have a mature conversation and acknowledge, you know, this is cool, but we're not going to work for each other right now is really promising. I like that.
Yeah. And I really, sorry,
go ahead.
I just really, there's something I read last year. It said, it was like a poem on Instagram, and said something along the lines of, what's meant to be will be, what's meant to stay will stay, what's meant to come back will come back.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute.
But it does, like, it is, and I know that we kind of brought this up in our other episode about, you know, relationships while traveling and stuff like that, but when there is this, like kind of when you know in your head that you're going to leave eventually, like it's not, I don't know, you're not somewhere that you live permanently.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to make, like, to be vulnerable or to be open or to make connections, like when there is this, like, kind of inevitable time limit on things. So you don't have to, like, play the game or
waste time, but, like, yeah, it's not as tedious as dating back home.
You don't have the time to waste, so you might as well just fucking jump right in on it and see what happens and enjoy it. Like, just enjoy the moment. And then that does tend to make a stronger connection with someone in a shorter amount of time.
Yeah.
And so you are able to have those serious conversations just after 3 days. But, like, if you were back home and you met someone after 3 days, you'd be having a serious conversation.
I made poor Rochelle after 2 weeks of pseudo dating. I kind of made her, like, because I was about to travel for 3 months, so I really liked her. So I kind of made her, like, make the call then and there. I'm like, okay, so we can either stop talking and we're not a thing, or we can keep talking, but I don't want to date other people until I get back. And she's like, oh, that's really fast. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to spend 3 months chatting with you every day and then have you go, oh, yeah, no, I'm dating this other guy now. Yeah.
Right.
It's so much harder when it's, like, a bit more of a settled thing. Like, she is, yeah, she's frantically signing at me. It can be harder to ask those questions or have those conversations when there isn't, like, the ability to just move on, like, if it gets awkward, you know what I mean? Like, she couldn't exactly, like, leave the country if I made it weird. She's like, I'm fucking stuck here now. Thanks, Chris. I think it's kind of cool that you are able to like form a bond with someone in a relatively short amount of time. I've never been able to do that traveling. Like, I always had my backpack of friends telling me all their cool stories, and I'd be like, I barely even made any friends, let alone, like, I'm just such an introverted person. Like, in a hostel, if someone doesn't push me to be social, I'll be just in my private room reading a book every night. So that's sort of an element of travel I missed out on, was that sort of dating locals. And even just dating as you travel is not something I've had a lot of experience with.
Yeah, certainly. And I think it's just where I've come, like, and I was reflecting on this because I've been, you know, on and off living abroad, traveling for maybe the past, like, 5 years with times working and going to university and all of that. But my first backpacking experience when I was in Eastern Europe, I was 20 years old and I was around a lot of people who were having flings, were having romances, were forming even relationships, yet none of that was really happening with me. And I recognize now too, it's almost like a deepened self-awareness too. Because even in that backpacking instance, like, you're meeting so many people and it would have been quote unquote, like, still easy, like it was for everybody else. But I don't think I was fully, like, in the right mentality or mindset. Whereas this time around, you know, I've grown up a bit and I know more about who I am and what I'm kind of, like, what I'm living for, and I'm living just to, you know, experience life and meet people and make connections and be a little vulnerable and love myself along the way. And I think that's been, like, I've done a lot of inner work to get to that point where I am just able to, if I feel this is going somewhere, I'm like, you know, let's connect and let's explore. Yeah.
I know that you, like, kind of said it earlier, but I wanted to bring it back to this, is that, like, when you were with the Vietnamese guy and you said that he, like, took you around on his motorbike everywhere, like, I do think that that is something that is so special when you are dating someone that is local, is that you really get to see and get like an almost deeper understanding and feeling about a place through the eyes or the knowledge or whatever of someone that is from there. And like, it's this experience that you can never have unless you were with someone that is from the place that you're in.
Yeah. It was just like in those moments with him, he like took me even to meet extended members of his family. And I mean, Vietnamese families are just so wonderful and welcoming. And so I remember being in Hue, which is like a city, like a couple hours along the Hai Van Pass up from Hoi An. And that's where he was mostly living. And I just got to, you know, be invited to dinner with his extended family and that, like, and just seeing and having those experiences and going to all these, you know, places in Hue or Hoi An or wherever we were, where it's only Vietnamese people eating there and talking there. And that was so cool too. And he just kind of took the reins and ordered food. And so for sure, it's just a different experience. And you get like a
deeper appreciation.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like being, you know, with him and on the back of his motorbike, it's interesting to sometimes observe what you might think others are thinking when, you know, they're clearly a local and you're clearly a foreigner. And I feel like there's a lot of curiosities from observers and outsiders.
Yeah. Did you ever catch flack from like dating locals from their friends or family or whatever being like, what are you doing with this Canadian chick?
Not particularly. And like, that was the only instance where I was meeting family, but I don't know if they fully like thought anything much of it. They were just so excited to feed me and like welcoming me. I think he played it out as though he was like a guide for me, is my assumption. Yeah. I really don't. And that, again, that's my assumption because we couldn't really speak about it. Like,
he's a really good guy. He's like, I'm doing such a good job.
Yeah, I couldn't just like ask him, so like, what do they think? Like, that was like a level of the English language.
You were just in the moment. You were enjoying it. Sure. There was no like.
Did it help with your language skills at all? Because Vietnamese is a bitch of a language to learn. But there's a saying in China that like that Chinese is best learned on the pillow. They were saying like, yeah, no, you'll learn it much quicker if you've got a Chinese lover. Did you find it? Because I mean, Vietnamese is one of the tougher languages to pick up. Fluency in it, at least. If there's words you can pick up, but with six tones and a lot of different grammatical rules and letters that look like letters from our language that make a totally different sound. Did you have any luck picking up language with him, or is it more just you just muddled through in your mix of languages and interpretive dance?
Interpretive dance.
Yeah, it's easier than mine.
That's funny. I tried with Vietnamese, and you're so right, Chris. Vietnamese is so difficult. Like just all the tones and accentuations on certain syllables, but I was trying. Like, I think I remember one dinner, he tried to teach me 1 to 10 in Vietnamese. Oh, and
I used to know this.
I know, and it was so hard. I just, like, I would try, and I had some, like, basic Vietnamese when I was there, and I really did, like, as much as I could, but it just, I needed maybe even more, and I would go back to Vietnam in a heartbeat just because I love Vietnam so much for so many reasons. Yeah. and so I would want to, I think it's one of those things, like when I lived in Tanzania, I picked up Swahili quite quickly. But that was also investment in lessons and really using it. And also Swahili was just alphabetically the same as English. So that made that a little simpler. So I feel like I have the motivation. It's just whether or not I have the resources and the time to fully play that through, but I tried with him for sure. I like could see that he was trying in English, and I so appreciated that. but you know, so I would try back.
I know Kate and I know the answer to this because we talked about it off call. So you were in Tanzania, and so did you date local? Did you have did it just not pop up? What was it like there on the dating scene?
Yeah, nothing ever manifested in Tanzania. I met a lot of foreign expats, specifically women who were with local men who are like married and had
that
kids.
That definitely seems more common there. I didn't know a lot of like Westerners dating Tanzanians when I lived there, but I saw Western men, I should say, but I knew a lot of Western women who were dating, married to, had kids with local men.
Yes, that was like a common theme. And yeah, they were like settled there. In fact, like they were either, you know, North American or British, and they had come to Tanzania to, you know, to have a gig or a job or a placement or research or whatever it was. And then they like were just living there full time. But most of their partners, because there was also a language barrier in Tanzania, and I'm sure you experienced that too, Chris, like even for being a pretty like tourist friendly country in East Africa. Mm-hmm. And for like, I think if you do the very tourist things like the Serengeti or you go to Zanzibar, like you'll have an easy enough time with basic Swahili. But like if you're living in a smaller town or what have you,
shopping at like a local market, it can get pretty difficult.
Yeah. And that's like also what motivated me to learn. But all the partners that these women were with, like, knew amazing English, and it's because I think they had worked for an international organization in Tanzania, or they had gone abroad themselves, so there was that accessibility. Yeah. But I never, yeah, nothing ever manifested in Tanzania. So I was in a relationship up until halfway through my year contract there, and then just was not into main, like putting myself out there in that way.
But I do find it interesting that there are some cultures where like there's a clear gender divide in who will date foreigners and who won't. So in China, for example, it's kind of the flip to what you experienced in Tanzania. Chinese women are generally, not all obviously, but it's quite common for Chinese women to date Western men.
Mm-hmm.
But you see a lot less like Western women dating Chinese men. In fact, there's whole communities built around this kind of solidarity between women who have Asian partners, and because they kind of get looked down upon for it, whereas no one ever looks down on a guy for having a Japanese wife or a Korean wife. But if a woman marries an Asian man, there's sometimes this very racist, let's be honest, belief that they're like settling for a lesser man. And obviously this comes from white men who are probably jealous that they can't get a white, like a woman. But it's just so weird to see cultures that where it's acceptable for one gender to date outside of that culture and not acceptable or not common for the other gender to do it.
Yeah, so I'm experiencing that in Morocco right now, where it's similar to what you're referencing about Tanzania, where it's way more common for local men to talk to and date and even get into relationships with foreign women. And that's, from what I've been talking about, it's like a cultural thing. It's a language thing. Like more men here know more English and are just around tourists more. Like you walk around, you know, the town, you go to a restaurant, you go to a cafe, you do a surf lesson, whatever have you. It's all men who are in like the frontline service industry. Like I don't see the women, you know, in the front, when it comes to the front line, like at the desk, at the, as a waiter, whatever, like it's all men. So it's just
the hospitality.
Yeah. The hospitality industry. And like, so in that regard, there's that, but also culturally, you know, like talking to some of my new foreign guy friends here, it's like, they're like, yeah, but if I was like to walk around with, you know, a local Moroccan woman, I would be, you know, asked so many questions and all these things. So it is quite interesting to see that reversal depending on where you are.
Now, and is that more judgment on the woman, or is that more judgment on the foreign men that's like stealing the local women?
Actually, I was about to ask the same question because I'm curious if it's like a lack of female autonomy or if it's more of a stay away from our women, foreign men who are not trustworthy.
Ooh, that, I think that's a complicated question. I don't want to
make assumptions.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a plethora of reasons, but is that kind of the interpretation from your friends that aren't locals that are dating local women? Like, is that kind of the feeling that they're getting, is that, you know, it's like an outsider, because especially if the men are more, like, if the local men are more of the front line mm-hmm. of hospitality and dealing with locals and stuff like that, like, it would be lesser seen for someone, like, a foreigner to come in and date someone that is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know where I was going with that.
as I feel
like
example,
it's less likely to happen, so it's less seen, and then so right. it's, you know, harder yeah. for people to.
I mean, as an example, it's not with... the same. It's not the same country or culture, but I do know in like certain Middle Eastern countries, it's not unusual for men to date foreign women, but it's very unusual for foreign men to date local women. But that is, in that case, usually an issue with, you know, female autonomy more than any mistrust of foreigners. So I was curious if Morocco led that way or if Morocco is more just its own thing with that.
I think I'm still figuring that out.
Well, you've only been there, what, a week now?
Two weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, we weren't
she's halfway through.
We don't understand all the nuances of Moroccan culture just yet. But I'm curious because I do know there are countries where obviously men have a lot more freedom in what they do in their youth than women do. So I wasn't sure if that's what the case was in Morocco.
Yeah.
If you're a listener and you're Moroccan, let us know.
Sure, I will do. I'll report back. But yeah, it's just been interesting. Like, to see the differences.
So one question that I wanted to ask, and for people that are listening, is kind of like, so you did say like you're not on the apps, you're not like searching actively for dating local people, but like how from, I know that it was kind of off air, but you were telling us kind of all the different people from different backgrounds that you've dated while you've traveled that are locals, like how do you go about meeting?
Sure. So that's a great question. It's a mix of where I'm staying at the moment. So whether it's a hostel or a hotel, they were either like maybe a staff member or like one case with my Cambodian guy, he was a bartender at the hostel. And it kind of just happens, very organically, but also simultaneously, kind of what you alluded to, Caitlin, like it's the organic, not rushing things, but also like, I think like there's a feeling of me that feels something here, and we'll take it year by year. And sometimes that's me, you know, just getting their WhatsApp or their Instagram and just chatting with them and seeing where things go. Sometimes, you know, there's so many social things that happen in all these communities, whether it's like, you know, a beach party or just like a gathering of people in the community at one bar. Like certain bars have like, oh, it's like party night at this place. And so that will bring a mix of people. And so I just go from there and I start to talk to them and read the situation from there. And then it kind of just unfolds, but I'm definitely not actively searching, but I'm also open to it. So I think that just creates a gateway to why I've experienced it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's all useful stuff, because a lot of people just probably wouldn't even know where to start. Like it's one thing to find a fellow backpacker and form something, but it can be quite daunting to try and befriend or date locals. So it's cool to know that you've sort of laid out how it works for you, and maybe other people can try that and go, oh, okay, that was actually really cool. I'm gonna try and interact with more locals as I travel.
Yeah. It's like, it's,
do you ever?
Sorry, go.
Sorry, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Canadian standoff.
But yeah, I would say like to answer really the
nut. I'm not Canadian.
North American.
People are too polite.
Oh, just too polite. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Like 10 minutes. It's like a Mexican standoff, but nicer.
Yeah, to answer like the nut of the question, I've met most of them through hospitality, like through that industry.
Yeah. So what I was gonna ask was, because like, so I've just moved back to Croatia. I've lived here a couple times, like I already have friends here. I know a lot of people here, locals and kind of in the expat community here. But I find like, and this has been my experience in other places as well, when I'm dating someone that is a local, and then like when you're with them and their friends, I mean, there's some people that like to practice their English. So in a group that all speaks one language from the place that you're at, they are all happy to speak English because you're there. Mm-hmm. But then in other places, like, especially like when I was in France, they hate speaking English and like, they'll speak English to me, but then I would be sitting there for like an hour just listening to people speak French. And I was like, I have no idea what the fuck's going on or what you guys are talking about. I'm just going to sit here and smile politely and nod my head. And I found that like really hard, like occasionally dating someone that is local when you're with their friends and in very much in their life. Because I don't speak the language, I can struggle to really feel like I feel like more of an outsider.
Right. Yeah, I felt that.
I don't know if you have experience in that.
And going back to my Vietnamese guy that I was with, it was very like that too, even though his family was so welcoming and, you know, we had meals together and all these things, but none of them spoke really English either. So I definitely felt, you know, I'm here and I feel like I feel a connection to a lot of individuals and humanity despite like language barriers anyways. Like I mean I'm saying now and more like a genuine smile and emitting a sense of patience is just such a universal language of love. And so I have that, but certainly, you know, I'm there maybe like having dinner and beers with this guy and his family and they're all laughing and joking about something in Vietnamese and then they're like looking at me and laughing and I'm like, haha, I don't know what's happening.
Are you laughing?
Yeah. And then like, yeah, you just don't, so I can really relate to that in that context for sure. I'm just like, I wish I understood what was happening at this point, you know? And that can for sure be an isolating experience because you're feeling these two intense emotions at once. One of like being welcomed and like a sense of hospitality and warmth, but also like total isolation.
Mm. Yeah. It's a weird like contradiction to have that at the same time, but.
Yes.
Well, I hate to say it this way, but like I almost get this like outsider guilt of like, when then people are like trying so hard to communicate, like, because if they don't speak English and they're struggling so hard and I'm like making everyone trying to speak English because it is more of the language. Like, it's not like we try super hard to speak somebody else. I mean, I do even here, like I know how to say please and thank you and like how to ask for things in Croatian, but outside of like normal pleasantries, I really don't know much. Mm-hmm. And I'm only here for a month. Like, I'm not going to learn how to speak Croatian magically in the month. And because it is the off season, like pretty much everyone around me is Croatian besides the slight few like friends I have here from the expat community. But everyone I hang out with pretty much on a day-to-day basis or interact with on a day-to-day basis is Croatian. And I almost get this like outsider guilt of like, you have to speak English because I'm here. And like, I felt that when I was dating people that were locals, like being around their friends and family and stuff of like, oh, because I'm here, I'm making everyone do this thing for me because I can't speak your language.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like when you travel and how many languages people abroad and from different countries know or try to know.
Yeah, compared to us, who generally only know one.
Yeah, like my
native English speakers.
My like, you know, yeah, like my Indonesian friends, like they know so many languages. Or Moroccan people, they're speaking like Arabic or their dialect of Arabic, French, English, sometimes Berber.
Yeah.
Like you're just like, what? And they speak English, but some of them speak English so well. So I haven't had the only instance where I had really this like kind of sense of confusion, isolation, and guilt that you're referring to, Caitlin, was more in Vietnam with that context. But otherwise, I didn't meet as many families outside of his. And if I was around friends with another person, then they spoke perfect English anyways.
Really good English.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, like, what you're saying is exactly right. Like even here in Croatia, like this is a language that not many people speak. Like it's it's a similar to like, you know, Bosnian and Serbian and even Czech, but for the most part everyone here speaks English. And then I've got a friend here that speaks like also French and German, and like she works in the hospitality, like travel industry, and she speaks like 5 languages. How?
Yeah.
And then I feel bad that I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I need to get over my little outsider guilt thing, like making you guys all conform to what's easiest for me and makes me feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was it. That was all I was going to say.
Yeah. No, I
think that sort of sums it up pretty well. Like that feeling. I've had that even outside of romantic context, just like when I lived in South Korea and worked there, I had a lot of coworkers, obviously Korean, who would take me out and we would socialize, but there'd be this awkwardness where they all felt obliged to speak English.
Yeah.
The funniest part was when they would switch to Korean and you'd hear like a bunch of Korean, and then you'd hear Chris, and you'd be like, yeah. Oh, sorry, we're talking about you. And we're like, but yeah, what's the problem? Stop that. Give me a nickname or something in Korean so I don't have to look up every time I hear my name mentioned.
Yeah.
But I think that sort of, it encourages you to practice a little bit. Like even if you're never going to be able to speak the local language as well as they're trying to speak yours, it's like, I'd find that most people appreciate it when you speak any of their language. Like I know Georgians are super excited if I can walk into a shop and instead of making them say, you know, hello and blah, 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 I say gamajoba and I say, you know, madlaba, just a little bit. And that's baby steps. I try and learn a new word every week.
Yeah, that's pretty much me here in Croatia. Yeah. Like, sometimes it backfires. Like I walk in and I'm like, Dobrodan. And then they just start speaking to me in Croatian. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
That happens to me too in some places. And I have had, like what you're saying, Chris, I've had a lot more of these instances, yeah, in friend groups. So less on the romantic side, more on like just the friendships I'm making. And I think also being just conscientious that like whether or not they're trying to speak English or not, for some people, like it is hard. And there's so many, and just being patient. Sometimes you have to, you know, repeat things. Sometimes you have to take it slower, you know, and just sometimes, like, especially with English, there's so many confusing accents. So sometimes I'm in groups and I'm like, you know, I met maybe a Chinese traveler and they're so lost.
Yeah.
But it's not just they don't know good English. It's just like there's a lot of dialects happening and a lot of this, so...
When native speakers get together, we rattle off words at a pretty fast rate compared to how we might talk to someone who we know is going to have trouble with the language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. I feel like I've had Chinese friends in a group of my English speaking friends, and they're the same. They're like they're enjoying it and they're trying to participate, but you know, it's like a tennis match. Their heads are bouncing around, watching, trying to figure out what the hell's being said.
Mm-hmm.
Kate, do we have any more questions? We just passed the hour mark, so that's usually where we'd play a game. But if you have any more questions, we should throw them out there.
No, I mean, like, I love this topic so much. Like, I was just going to kind of sum it up. No, I was just going to, like, try and, like, if we can, like, sum it up of, like, basically pros and cons of dating people that are, and I mean cons in the nicest sense, but, the benefit and the difficulties of dating someone local when you're traveling, especially when you're traveling such like a, I don't want to say fast pace, because you're spending your month in every place. Like it's much slower than the average person that's like there on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
if you had to name
a fast pace than if you're actually dating someone.
Yeah. If you had to name like the three biggest pros and the three biggest cons, what would they be, do you think?
That's a good question. And I really wanted to also like segue the pros and cons list. There's an article by one of my favorite travel bloggers. She's Canadian. Her name's Brenna Holman from This Battered Suitcase. And she has an article that's so poignant on this topic. It's called Holiday Goggles, Why Not All Travel Romances Are Meant to Last. And it really kind of sums up the pros of dating, and from my experience dating locals, is just meeting different people and meeting and having different personalities and learning about culture and the world through their eyes, learning about what you appreciate in somebody else. You know, it's all just the magic of life. Like ultimately I do want to meet a partner. And I think another pro is whether it's back with one of these guys or not, I'll have had this multitude of experiences and perspectives in communication, in barriers, in, you know, in differentiating chemistry from not chemistry. And that's been, you know, such a gift. And knowing also what it means to feel, for like the cheesy way, but kind of sparks. Because with all of these
connection with the, someone.
Yeah. I hadn't, in many situations in my dating life before, it's either been a slow burn or which is like also I believe in that too. So that's a whole other thing. But it was very rare that I felt sparks and the other person felt the same way. And so it's been now a lesson in learning to judge how I feel and not being as dreamy about it, but actually seeing and trusting if I sense the other person feels or not. And I'm better at gauging if it's just in my head, in my dreamy La La Land head, or if I really feel like realistically they feel it too. So I've just been better at gauging that. So I'd say that's a big pro in that. Cons are, it's, at first I would have said, and this is still a con, it's, you know, it's a lot to be a vulnerable feeler and coming after each one, whether they were more of a lighthearted, fun flirtation or a little more emotional, it's really hard. Like, I leave it, like, feeling very sad and very down. And so each time...
Yeah, even if you know that, like, the time is up and you don't want to, like, it's not something that you want to pursue any longer as you're traveling and stuff like that, it's still hard to say goodbye to someone that you've made a bond with in some way or form.
Yes, yes. So it's still very saddening, and I have to take time to kind of like, process it and all of these things. And, you know, after... I moved on from one of them last year. I was like talking with like a girlfriend at the time, and she was saying something like, you know, like maybe, you know, if you need to, you know, just take that space for yourself. I know you wear your heart on your sleeve, but all like be maybe just like try to not refrain, but, you know, just be a little cautious, because it's clear that your heart's very like, your heart's feeling this after each and every time. And it's just very, it's a lot of emotional work. But on the other hand, I've come to realize like, I can't just stop being me. So I can't, like, I'm very heart forward and all of these things. And so I'm just navigating how to mitigate the aftermath of what my favorite, one of my favorite authors, Brené Brown, she calls it a vulnerability hangover. And that's what it feels like. But, and then I would say, yeah, the con is just like sometimes wishing that it could, with select few of the people I've been with, wishing it could be more, but like wishing it could be a full-fledged relationship. But that's really difficult, and not with all of them. I think just with a very select few, as I said, but the con is wishing for it, but trusting that what's meant to be will be, instead of sort of balancing that need to, oh, but like, I feel like we could, you know, make it work, blah, blah, blah. But also like, but is that forcing it too much? Because my hormones are like crazy and, and all these things. So it's navigating really responsible, mature decisions with this like kind of dreamy rose-colored glasses.
Romanticized idea, yeah.
Yes, yes. Does that make sense?
I have a question that we didn't really cover, well, not cover, but ask. Do you keep in contact, like, with past lovers?
I do.
after you've left, like, is there still this communication and chatting and... Because I know, like, because I've done that. Like, that's, I'm so bad for that. And we did cover this in our other episode. It makes it so much like, harder. It does make it so much harder. And I'm so bad about it. But I can't, like, for me, it's really hard to say goodbye and let go. And, like, I can't, like, someone that was really important to me and really special to me just cut ties. And so I usually, like, there is this open line of communication that does fucking end up screwing me over in the end. But,
yeah, no, I'm in touch with a few of them off and on, but I'm very mindful of what you're saying. Like, I'm not necessarily messaging them all the time or like kindling that fire. But I, with some of them, I wanted to stay somewhat like friends. Like, I just like, I was like, you know what? Like, even if we're just meant to stay friends and whatever's meant to be, like, I'm happy with that because you're such a great person. And, but that's taken, like, that was work of like time and space away from talking with them for a bit. Right. So it's, because with like time and, you know, time heals all, I guess, but with time, it's made it easier to let go and move on to the romanticized version of that person and see them more as like a person. And that's also the case too. Like, you're wearing, as Brenna sort of says in that article, you are, to a sense, wearing, you know, rose colored glasses. And so when you have some time after you're kind of just mourning the loss of that connection in that way, then you come out of it and you're like, you know what? It was just in that moment that, you know, our pheromones were acting crazy. I was in this new place and I was exploring.
Well, you're almost in this constant state of like honeymoon period.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really good way to put it. Exactly. So with like time, if that's something I decide I want to stay friends with them because I just think they're a really rad person, then it's easier to separate once I have that space, if that makes sense.
Oh. I could honestly talk about this forever.
I know.
We can do a second episode. We can get Lydia back on and we can do a whole other chat about it.
Yeah.
I just find it so interesting, especially because this is the first time. I mean, I've lived in a bunch of different countries for, you know, a decent and or slightly shorter amount of time, but it's always been in hospitality sort of thing. So like, I've worked for bars, I've worked for hostels, like, and so I'm only meeting foreigners.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whereas like now this time, like, this is why this topic is so interesting to me now, is because I've lived in Split two other times and I've been here probably almost 10 times
right.
to visit, but I've always been here during the high season.
Mm.
And so now coming back and I'm here for 6 weeks and I'm here during the low season and literally everyone around me is Croatian or, you know, besides the few friends I have that are expats that live here. And so it's very interesting now being here and like walking around and pretty much everyone I encounter is Croatian. I've never dated, like, I've been here so many times, but I've always dated, I even dated people that lived here, but they were expats that lived here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot less of them here right now in the off season, and like being here, and I've just never even thought about dating locals here, but now being here this time, I'm like,
maybe.
Yeah, and I think give it a chance. And as I like alluded to in the beginning, it's not like I'm seeking out to only date locals either.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And it'd be the same. Like, I'm just seeing if there's connections and then going from there. It'd be the same if even I was like dating in the Canadian dating scene back home, like.
Yeah.
And even, like, it's not, like, every local I meet here I click with either, too, obviously. Yeah. So it's, I think, just, like, but, yeah, for sure, there's a sense of, like, being, I think, just open to it and trying it out just as you would, you know, date back home without the pressure of, like, oh, I need to date to find a relationship. It's just about the experience of meeting different kinds of people and just, you know, abundance mentality. There's plenty of fish in the sea and... let's see where each one gets me, and maybe one will get to me, to my person, but if not, it's a great story and a great experience.
Absolutely.
It's a good attitude to travel with, I think.
Yeah, it's...
in general, like being open to everything, like romance, friendships, experiences. It's like if you're going around with a closed mind or a hard... and I say itinerary in the sense of like a hard idea of the things you will do and the things you won't, you're not going to have the same experiences if you just go in and let stuff happen, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. So do we have time for a game?
I want to play a game.
I have mine already ready. So I believe we're playing Red Flag, Deal Breaker, or Love It, right?
Oh, I love these games.
Red Flag or Deal Breaker.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to, usually when you, like, I was looking it up recently, there's also the option to just say the thing is actually a love it for you. Like, they might do a thing that you actually are like, I love that.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's another podcast I listen to. They play this game every single episode. It's hilarious. And for the most part, it's red flag or deal breaker, but every once in a while they're like, no, that's a green light for me. I'd jump their bones.
Yeah.
Like this one here is like one of the examples is like they want to have the wedding in Vegas. And I'm like, hey, someone might be into that.
Right. Wait, so what are the options?
I'm dying to have a wedding in Vegas.
My wife wasn't having it.
I tried to get my Australian friend to marry me. We were in Vegas, and the whole road trip to Vegas, he was like in. And then when it actually came down to doing it, he was like, what happens when I'm like, how do we deal with this legally? What will my mom say? And he just son of a bitch, I was so close.
My mum encouraged Rochelle and I to get married in Vegas on that last trip. She's like, yeah, you guys just do it there. I'm like, mum, I've already paid for a wedding. I'm not doing a cheap like Vegas one first, maybe after.
Maybe after.
So I'm going to jump in. Red flag or deal breaker. They're still super close friends with their ex.
Ooh.
Hold on. Define super close.
Yeah, that's
super
like
close.
Like, how often are they talking? Like daily?
Like any good friend.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, like they're great friends with their ex. I don't think it's daily texting, but let's say they hang out occasionally. They check in with each other a few times a week, like you would with any good friend.
Mm. Okay. Ooh, not a deal breaker, but maybe a red flag.
I would think, yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'd say a little uncomfortable. I'd say red flag, but I'm also someone that, like, I love to stay friends with an ex because they're, like, I don't know, like, unless they did something to be super, like, hurtful or harmful or whatever, like, I cared about you for a point in time. Like, I think you're a really awesome human being. Just because we couldn't make it work romantically, that doesn't take away from the fact, like, I'm not one of those people that's like, once we break up, that's it, we're done, no connection.
Right.
Like, no contact. Like, I just can't be that sort of person. So I've tried to be friends with exes, although they've dated people that it's a deal breaker for them.
Oh, yeah. And wow.
Like, eventually they all...
A lot.
That's interesting.
I dated someone in college that I was really good friends with my high school boyfriend. He was really good friends with his high school girlfriend.
Mm.
And neither of us had an issue with it. Like, I would have my moments of jealousy if they were... because he had moved home for a summer and they... like would go out to lunch and stuff. And I'd have my moments of jealousy, but I realized it was because like she was getting to spend time with him that I wasn't, because we were doing the long distance thing. It wasn't because I ever thought that there was something there, that something would happen.
Yeah. That's a good thing to pinpoint.
Her and I ended up actually becoming really good friends. We almost moved to another country together. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's a red flag, I guess, if they're talking all the time, I'd have like my wits about me, but I would never find it a deal breaker.
Yeah. I think if it was like what you say is really on point. It's just like, it would be something, it would be a red flag maybe if they told me at first, but then if I had an inherent sense of trust,
yeah,
if I felt that deep down, then I wouldn't want, like, I wouldn't have any need to any question what was going on in that relationship anywho. But yeah, then it would be a red flag if I felt like beyond that, like this sense of like distrust, you know?
Yeah, yeah, well, that's more of a red flag for the relationship.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
It's not so much that, like, there's something going on, but just, like, if you don't trust them, then that's more like, okay, you guys have bigger things to deal with.
Okay.
I did not prepare.
I have another one. You need. They clap every time the plane lands and every time a movie ends at the cinema.
Oh, my God.
Thank you, BuzzFeed, and that's my last one.
I don't particularly think those are bad things.
I just get embarrassed after a while. I'd be like, sit down.
Oh.
Like, can you imagine they stand up at when the plane lands and they're like, yeah. That would just be like, guys, okay, it's not funny, babe. Sit down.
I hadn't heard of plane clapping. Speaking of, there was like when I landed in Morocco, people clapped. And I hadn't heard.
Yeah, that happened when we landed in Milan like a couple months ago. Two people were all applauding. I'm like, there wasn't even that much turbulence. Like, the guy literally just flew us from there to there. There's no challenge in that for him. Deal breaker, red flag.
Yeah. So I like this one. Okay. So I'm trying to stick to that. I wanted to stick to like the locals, like dating locals thing. So your partner is incredibly close with their mother.
Ooh.
Like every decision has to get mom's opinion. Because there are a lot of cultures that are very
most of East Asia. China, so Korea, Japan.
Like, every decision has to get mom's approval.
Yeah, I think that would be, I don't, like, yeah, of course, like, in general, the, like, that happens, but then there's, like, a lot of exceptions, too, but if that were the case, I feel like, oh, yeah, that would be, it'd be a red flag. I think I would have to evaluate some other factors, but I think at first that would make me uncomfortable and go from there.
Yeah, I think that'd be a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, me too.
I have, like, I mean, and I totally understand why you're saying red flag, and I admire where you're coming from with the situation. I just can't, like, there's almost, for me, there's this level of, like, immaturity if you can't make your own decision.
That's a good point. But
I
do understand,
and I don't know, maybe that's just because, like, I'm someone that is so independent. Like, I've never needed, like, my parent, like, I'm really close with my mom.
Yeah.
And I do, like, bounce ideas off of her and, like, to get her input on things and things like that. But, like, I don't know. And I don't know, maybe it's shallow of me to put it in more of the, like, from a woman's point of view, like, the mama's boy thing. Which is very appealing.
There's something kind of eatable about it, too. If someone keeps going back to their mom for every single thing.
Yeah.
It's vaguely eatable for me. That'd be a hard pass. I mean, I don't date men, so it's not a problem. But the whole thing would make me a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's true.
Especially if you come to, like, I think if you come to a, like, every time we have to make a decision that's, like, between me and you, and, you know, there has to be, like, a compromise or whatever, like, are you always going to be like, okay, like, we think this way, but let me see what my mom says.
We're adults.
Like,
that's a good point when you say it like that.
Roses for the wedding. Just let me run up my mom real quick, babe. Like,
yeah, that's a really good point, actually, when you put it like that. It might be more of a deal breaker.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I'm also fiercely independent, too, so.
Yeah. I'm just like, can you just fucking be a grown man and make your own fucking decisions?
Put on your big boy pants.
All right. Well, do you have any more, Chris?
No. I think that's good. I think we covered some ground, got some nuggets. I mean, I can't action any of this because I'm married now. This would have been all very helpful like 10 years ago when I was like that shy idiot in the hostel trying to figure out how to talk to people. But, yeah, no, that was fun. I think we got a lot of stuff covered. And by the sounds of it, Kate wants to do an episode 2 at some point and go over it in more detail.
I just could talk about relationships and dating forever. I find it so fucking interesting.
We can come up with another topic about relationships and make it work.
Especially because travel is such a big part of all of our lives that are on this episode. Like, that is such a huge factor that comes into play. And it's, like, struggle and also a blessing. Like navigating romantic relationships when you are abroad and traveling. So I just find it so interesting.
Yeah. And it's something I haven't really like publicly talked about that much, like besides my spaces, like I haven't really written about it, but I'd love to do an article about like how being a digital nomad has been the best and worst for my dating life.
Rochelle wrote an article for Matador Network about that a few years ago about, and had a Huffington Post about how travel's ruining her love life. So that was kind of what put her on my radar.
I've had plenty of, it's not like I'm like this sad single woman. I've had plenty of situationships that have happened, but I thought about it the other day with someone and I was like, the last time I actually had someone that I would call my boyfriend, like boyfriend was like 6 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
I've been in love since then, and like I've had situationships, but they've all been with people that I've met traveling, and so kind of like we're long distance, but still never like this committed relationship. Just like these like situations because of my nomadic lifestyle. It's very different, and I always tend to, and I brought this up in our other episode. Like I always tend to meet people right before I'm leaving.
That's the curse.
So yeah, like it's really like I haven't actually had someone like to call a boyfriend in like 6 years. It's a very long time.
Yeah,
it is. All this traveling is really ruining my love life.
I think Rochelle was at like 5 years or something, or 4 years when we met. So there's hope for you yet.
What do you think? I'm only here for 6 weeks. Like, I don't want to. I guarantee I'll meet someone the last week before I move back.
To girl, I mean, 6 weeks, girl. That's a long time. A lot can happen.
Yeah, hell, 6 weeks.
Well, we'll have to check back in 6 weeks.
Yeah, we'll be like, hey, how you follow the teachings?
The teachings of Lydia. Yeah.
Keep your heart open.
I'll do my best. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Lydia. This was a kick.
Do you have any socials, anything you need us to plug? We'll put them, obviously you can shout them out here, but we'll also put them in the description of the episode.
Yeah. Follow my great vulnerable worldly adventures on Instagram. I'm at Lydia Tlem. And I am a freelance writer, editor, copywriter. So if you need those services, I freaking love it. And I'm happy to help tell your story. So you can visit my site, lydiapaulina.com.
Cool.
Nice.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Enjoy your time in Morocco.
Thank you.
And we will see you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday.
Epic. Thanks so much, guys. This is so much fun.